brushing aside her jacket for me to see the grip of what looked suspiciously like a Ruger LCR-38 revolver. "Well, then," I said lightly, "I won't waste any more of your time," and started to turn and walk away. I figured it was a no-win situation, not worth the hassle. "The menus," she said quietly, "put 'em back where you got 'em." I turned back, smiled at her, lifted the lid and slid the two menus back inside the dumpster. "If you want to stay healthy," she said, leaning forward slightly, "you should keep your nose out of where it doesn't belong. Don't come back, you hear?" I didn't answer. I turned away and walked on down the alley to the next building, where I stopped and turned to look at her. She was gone. That building was boarded up, too, but there were a few broken slats that provided me with a look inside. It was dark with lots of cobwebs and dust. There was nothing in there except maybe a few rats and cockroaches. I thought about what Amber had said. The bitch knew a whole lot more than she was telling me. She was packing. Since when did waitresses carry? My phone rang again. I looked at the screen. It was Kate. I answered it. "Hey," she said, "where are you?" It's a long story. How about you meet me at my office in, say, an hour, and I'll tell you everything." "Okay. I'll wrap up here and head back to town. What's the address?" I gave it to her and ended the call. I rounded the corner back on the third, just in time to see a cop giving me a ticket. "Hey, it's a legal parking zone." She looked up from her pad and pushed back her hat a little. "Your license plate's missing. Let me see your ID." "Ah, hell, not again." I handed her my driver's license. She walked back to her cruiser. 2 minutes later, she was back and handed me my license. "Get the license plate taken care of, Mr. Stark," she said as she handed me the ticket. She tipped her hat at me, got in her cruiser, and drove away. Damn. Chapter 18. I drove to Enterprise on West 20th and rented a car. I left the Maxima with them, promising to return in a couple of days with a new license plate, and then I drove down to Georgia Avenue in my new office. I found it easy enough and was impressed. We had a ground floor suite at the end of the block, complete with a small parking lot, big enough for maybe a half dozen cars, surrounded by a gated security fence. The gate was open, so I drove in, parked, and entered through a side door. Neat. Ronnie had done well. "Hey, Ronnie, how are things coming along?"
"Pretty good, I think, so far. What do you think of the place?"
"From what I've seen, I like it."
He beamed.
"Great. So we've set up desks, all but yours, since I figured you'd want to pick out your own furniture, and we need to order a table for the conference room. I'm going to leave that to Jackie. I love her. She's amazing. Love the accent. She's Jamaican, did you know? Where the hell did you find her?"
I laughed. "Would you believe at my doctor's office? She's one of his patients. I paid her bill. That reminds me. See that she has some cash. I have a feeling she's just about broke. Tim, too. Where are they, by the way?"
"Jackie's gone to Staples to get supplies. Tim's in the back office. He grabbed it for his own. You've no objection, right?"
"Of course not. What's he up to back there?"
"Who the heck knows? He's damn brilliant. I can't understand half of what he says. Our visit to Best Buy was quite an adventure. He ordered desktops for me, Jackie, and someone else yet unknown and yet to be hired. He was thinking ahead, I guess. A printer and some other bits and pieces, and a MacBook and an iPad for himself. But the rest of what he needs, he has to order. Servers, routers, monitors, and God only knows what else." Ronnie stopped talking for a second and chuckled. "He's going to cost you a small fortune before he gets done.
but I think it'll be worth it. The kid's a genius. Hey, you want to see your office?
Sure, show me.
It's right here in the corridor, just off the main office. He opened the door and stood aside for me to go in, which I did. It was big and bare, but I immediately fell in love with a great stone fireplace at the far end of the room.
"Hey, you two," Kate said. "What's going on?"
"Wow, nice office, Harry. Very upmarket. Well, it will be when I get done with it."
"When you get done with it? What the heck does that mean?"
"Well, you're obviously going to be busy, so I'll decorate it for you if you like." I nodded thoughtfully and said,
"Okay."
"Great," she said. "Tomorrow's Saturday. I'll make a start in the morning. What sort of budget do I have?"
"Whatever it takes, girl. Whatever it takes. Kate, you're working. What about the case?"
"It's kind of stalled. You know how it is, Harry. We spend more time waiting for the experts. DNA, FBI. I'll take a couple of vacation days and get it done."
I shrugged. "Okay, if you think Henry will go for it."
"Harry, I'm owed more than 40 days. He'll go for it."
"If you say so. Okay, so Ronnie and Tim, you already know. Jackie will be back soon, and I'll introduce you to her. In the meantime, I'll fill you in on what happened after I left you guys." And I did. I told them about my visit with Shady.
"Shady gave you information willingly?" Kate asked skeptically.
"No, just the opposite. He told me he wouldn't give me any info, just that organized crime was involved and that the guys running whatever it was were untouchable. It wasn't much, but it was something."
"Sounds like Shady," Kate said. "So do you have any idea what or who we're dealing with?"
"No, but if he's right, it's big, and we need to find out what it is and quickly before anyone else dies. I'm thinking it's about the money. Marsh scammed, and they're using Phoebe as leverage. Ronnie, go get Tim. I need you two to work together and find out."
He went to find Tim, and Kate and I went out into the main office. I sat on the edge of one of the desks and Kate on one of the chairs. Ronnie came back a minute later with Tim in tow, with a laptop in one hand and an iPad in the other.
"Sit down, both of you," I said. "Tim, I need you and Ronnie to get to work. Is that laptop capable of doing what you need until you get the good stuff?"
He grinned, poked at the bridge of glasses, looked at Kate, blushed, nodded, and said,
"It depends what you need. It's not ideal, but for now, I'll do what I can."
I nodded.
"Good." I turned to Ronnie. "What do you know about Frank Marsh?"
"Not much more than you. I know he was an investment banker and that he ran several successful hedge funds."
I noticed that Tim had his iPad open and was typing notes into it.
"His main claim to fame, though," Ronnie continued, "was his high-yield investment portfolio, which was an extremely sophisticated Ponzi scheme."
What exactly are we talking about here?" I asked.
Ronnie nodded. Looked at Tim, who grinned at him, and then said,
"Ponzi schemes can be fairly complex, even when operated on a small scale, which Marsh's wasn't. He took his investors for more than $100 million before he got caught.
It works like this. One person, sometimes a single group, coordinates every aspect of the scheme. That coordinator convinces numerous victims that they're investing in a legitimate investment fund with promises of big returns. Most offer unbelievably high returns of 20% and up, but Marsh was smart. He didn't do that. He guaranteed an ROI, a return on investment, of 15%. Pretty good, but still impossible to maintain in today's economy. 4 or 5% would have been achievable." Tim typed furiously on his iPad, soaking up all the details. Now that we were in the office, the geek seemed to be in his element. Ronnie continued,
Well, anyway, the Ponzi scam artists are constantly on the hunt for new investors. They use the new investment money to pay dividends to the existing investors. And it works, at least for a while. For the scam to continue to work indefinitely, the coordinator would need to have access to an infinite supply of new investors. And that's where, sooner or later, it falls apart. The supply of new investors runs out and funds dry up, as happened with Marsh and, to a much greater extent, Bernie Madoff. When that happens, the investors lose everything they put into it, and, if he's smart, the person running the scheme liquidates and leaves, vanishes before anyone can figure it out. Marsh got caught, but the money is gone. Where it's gone to is the big mystery. I think it's probably invested offshore in untraceable shell companies. Tracking those down is going to be a problem. I looked at Tim. What do you think? I asked. I think it will take some time, but it's not impossible. This, he said, looking at the laptop, is not up to it, but my servers won't arrive until Tuesday, so it will have to do for now. Can we hurry it up? I asked. He looked a little perplexed, did his thing with his glasses, looked up at the wall clock, then took out his phone and made a call. Hey, Jerry, he said into the phone. Look, I need that equipment like yesterday. Can you overnight it for me? I'll pay the cost. Okay, that's cool. You'll send me a bill. Great. Thanks, Jerry. He ended the call, looked up at me, and said, Monday by 10 o'clock. That's the best he can do. EPB will be here around 5 this afternoon to install the Wi-Fi, and it will take me an hour to set everything up on Monday. So I should be up and running by 11:30 at worst. That's the best I can do. I nodded slowly, looking at him, thinking how fortunate I was to have attended Ronnie's poker game where I met him. I had a feeling the kid was going to be my greatest asset. It'll do fine, Tim. In the meantime, do what you can with what you have. Here's what we need to know. I thought for a minute while Tim watched, poised over his iPad. Okay, I want to know everything there is to know about Frank and Phoebe Marsh, his Ponzi scheme, a list of investors, and I want you to try to track down the money. That's priority one. I'm thinking that maybe Phoebe is the key to this thing. I paused, then continued. Find out everything you can about a thug named Joseph James. He uses JoJo or JJ. I want to know who he works for, where he lives, the works. The same for one Benny Brown, late of this world, found dead in Ronnie's car. I stopped for a second to make sure Tim was keeping up. He was. I find out all you can about the dead waitress, Penelope Ross, and if you can, what her connection is to the case and to... Okay, that brings me to the Rose Cafe, now Lucky's Diner. Who owns it? I think it's a front for something illegal, human trafficking, maybe. I met another waitress there. Her name is Amber. I think she's much more than a waitress. I see what you can dig up on her. Again, I had to pause and think back over the last couple of days. There was a guy in the Sorbonne, small mouth, no forehead, a thug. It was him that snatched Phoebe Marsh. I need to know who he is and who he works for. I don't know how you'll pull that off. Hell, I'll go talk to Laura. Maybe she knows who he is. Finally, there's money from the Ponzi scheme. We need to find... I was interrupted by the side door opening and a tight rear end clad in skin-tight jeans pushing inside. Okay, Tim, I said, that'll do for now. A female voice with a Jamaican accent called out, Hey, can somebody please help me get all this stuff in out of my car? Jackie turned around, a large cardboard box in her arms. She dumped the box right next to me on the desk and said, Hey, boss. If you wouldn't mind, please get your ass off my desk. She looked at Kate. Who's this? I laughed and introduced them. Then Ronnie and Tim went outside with her and began bringing in box after box of... I never did find out.
So, Kate said, it begins. Your genesis from cop to PI. I'm proud of you, Harry.
I smiled at her. I was kind of proud myself.
Chapter 19. I spent most of the weekend at my new offices. The place was a hive of activity. Kate and Jackie spent Saturday morning together shopping for office furniture, mostly for what was to become known as my lair, but also for filing cabinets, two more desks and chairs for the outer office, and a fancy handmade conference table and chairs, and a whole lot of other stuff I won't bore you with. Suffice it to say that by the time Monday morning rolled around, the place had gone from bare bones to a fully functional business office. Me? I didn't spend much time there. Not because I would have been in the way, which I would have been, but because I had three murders and a kidnapping to solve. I was antsy and needed to get on with it, so while the girls were doing their thing, I hunkered down with Ronnie and Tim, brainstorming mostly. By 4 o'clock that afternoon, I'd had enough. I gave it up. I had it in my head that Phoebe was the key to solving the case. I had to find her. To do that, I had to find Smallmouth, the guy who grabbed her that night at the Sorbonne. And that meant I needed information. I needed to know who the hell he was and who he worked for. Goliath, JoJo James, was also a possibility, but I didn't know where to find him either. Well, at least I had a photo of him. But there was an inherent problem with that, too. I knew he killed Stitch. I'd seen him do it. I also figured him for Penelope's murder, and I'd already made myself a promise. When I found him, I was going to kill him. After I drained him of everything he knew, of course. I took out my iPhone and opened the photo, stared at his ugly mug for several minutes, shook my head, and put the phone away. And then there's Benny Brown, I thought. Who killed him and stuffed him in Ronnie's trunk? And why? Was it connected to Frank Marsh and his Ponzi scam? If it was he killed just to frame me or... unbelievably, Ronnie? If so, it was a pretty weak effort. Even the new kid, Tim, had been able to see through it. And there was one more thing niggling at the back of my brain. What part was Shady Tree playing in the grand scheme, if at all? If he was involved, who was he working for? They'd killed his kid. I couldn't believe even he would lie down for that. Even so, I knew him well enough to know that if there was an easy buck to be made, Shady would find a way to shove his slimy fingers into the pie. It was a lot to think about, and I needed a place to start. Or should I say, a whom. And who, I thought, would be better than my old friend Benny Hinkle. That fat little bastard has his ear so close to the ground it's a wonder he doesn't get it stepped on. Or at least kicked. I knew the Sorbonne opened for business at 4 o'clock. I also knew that the place would be deserted at that time of day, any day. I wanted to talk to Benny Hinkle and Laura, too, if she was there. Early afternoon, before 4, would be the best time to do it. I was hoping those security cameras in the darkened corners of the bar were just that, security cameras, and not fakes just for show. I made arrangements to meet with Kate later that evening. Then I drove my rented car to Prospect Street, a dismal alley that gave access to the rear entrance of the Sorbonne, the same one where Smallmouth had abducted Phoebe, and I parked close by.
I locked the car and stepped up to the ill-maintained, rusty, paint-peeling steel door, thumbed the bell push, and waited. And I waited. And I pushed it again.
Damn it, Benny, come on. Finally, I heard the locks being turned and the door opened an inch. Two beady eyes peered out at me. I sighed,
shook my head, put a hand on the door, and pushed hard.
Benny staggered back, squeaking with indignation.
Damn it, Stark! What you doing using the back door? Why'd you not come in the damn front door like any other civilized dumbass?
Any other time, I would have slapped this silly face for him, but I needed him to be cooperative, so I played nice.
I didn't want to be seen coming in here, Benny, okay?
I'll lighten up a little. I just want to talk to you. You got a few minutes? He looked at me, frowning, then nodded somewhat mollified, I thought, then stood back and allowed me to walk through. He slammed the door behind me and locked it.
There's no one in the bar. Not yet. We'll go in there. Come on.
I followed him as he waddled along the dark corridor past the restrooms and into the bar. More than ever, he reminded me of Danny DeVito playing Louis De Palma in the TV show Taxi. He even had some of the same mannerisms. I'd been in that bar more times than I could count, and it was always the same. Only this time it wasn't. It took me a couple of minutes to realize what was different. No loud music. Thank God for that, I thought, waving a hand at Laura, who was behind the bar cleaning glasses. Benny, led me to a booth, and we sat down opposite each other.
Okay, Harry, Benny said, leaning forward, placing his elbows on the table and clasping his hands together in front of him. Talk to me. No, wait, you're not a cop anymore. I don't have to talk to you now, do I?
You're right, Benny. I'm not a cop anymore. I'm a private investigator. And no, Benny, you don't have to talk to me. But haven't I always treated you nice, and Laura, too? Where is she, by the way? Oh, never mind, I see her. And would you like me to continue treating you nice? The alternative could be, shall we say, painful? He shook his head, tiredly, caught the drift of what I'd just said, looked sharply at me, and said, "Private investigator. You're kidding me, right?" I shook my head, saying nothing.
"You're serious."
I nodded, saying nothing.
"Frickin' hell, Harry. Who you think you are, Sam frickin' Spade?"
"Stop it, Benny. Are you going to help me or not?"
He grinned at me, leaned back on his seat, his hands still together on the table, and said slyly, "What's in it for me?" I stared at him for a long moment. My eyes narrowed, my lips clamped together, slowly shaking my head. He got the message. He leaned forward again and said, "Okay, seeing as it's you, what do you want to know?" "Last Wednesday, we played poker, remember?" He nodded. "There was a girl. Remember her?" He thought, then nodded and said,
"Yeah, I remember. What about her?"
"Do you know who she is?" He shook his head.
"Should I?"
"No, but she was snatched out back, and I'm trying to find her."
"You never said anything about nobody being snatched."
"No, well, I thought maybe. Never mind what I thought. The guy who grabbed her was sitting at the bar, a mean-looking dude. Small mouth, big forehead, broken nose. Do you remember him?"
"Yeah, he followed you in. I thought at first he was with you. But he sat at the bar, had a couple of drinks, and he must have left. But I didn't see him go."
"Who is he? Do you know?"
"I've seen him a couple of times. Well, several times. Usually there are two of them. Him and JoJo James."
I stared at him, barely breathing, trying not to show my elation.
"Oh, yeah," I said. "And who's he, this JoJo James?"
"I don't know who your guy is, but if he's running with JoJo, I'd say he's a hard case. JoJo is a freelance enforcer. Muscle." I took out my phone, opened the photo I'd taken of James, and showed it to Benny. "This guy, right?" He took the phone from me, stared at it, smiled, and said, "You do this to him?" I nodded. Tough he might be, but he passed out at the sight of his own blood. Benny looked nervously around and said, "You better go, Harry.
I don't want no trouble, and this guy is trouble. I swear to God, you did this to him? He's after you big time.
I can handle him. Who's he working for, Benny?
I don't know, Harry, really, I don't. I told you, he's freelance, works for anybody who'll pay his price.
And you think they're working together, JoJo and Smallmouth?
He shrugged. Who's to say? But if they're spending time together...
I nodded. I thought for a minute, then said, and you've never seen the girl before.
I didn't say that. She's been in several times. Not lately, but usually she's with a bunch of kids. Students, I reckon. It's been, hell, I don't know, a year anyway, maybe longer.
That tallied with what Phoebe had told me.
Well, she told me she knew the place.
What about her dad, Frank Marsh? You know anything about him?
Are we talking about the Frank Marsh, the investment banker that screwed all those folks?
If so, no, nothing. I feel for the kid, though. Can't be fun having to handle that kind of crap.
I nodded. Couldn't help but agree with him.
One more question, Benny, and I'll let you get back to whatever it is you were doing.
What do you know about Benny Brown?
He shrugged.
He used to come in here often. Not so much lately. A small-time player, mostly drugs. Don't know if he still does, but he used to work for a friend of yours.
He paused, grinned at me, and said, Shady Tree.
Holy shit, Benny. Are you serious?
Now, when did I ever lie to you, Harry?
I was stunned. I'd been a cop for 10 years and was used to being surprised. In my line of work, you never can tell what's just around the corner. That one, though, I hadn't seen coming. Not at all. I looked up at the camera in the corner of the room and said, that thing work, Benny? Or is it just for show?
Hey, Laura, he shouted across the bar. Harry needs the tape for last Wednesday from the security system.
She nodded, turned, stooped down behind the bar, and came up holding the VHS tape.
You gotta be kidding me.
Thanks, Betty, I said, rising to my feet and fishing out my wallet. If you hear anything, see anything, if either of those two should drop by, I want to know, soonest. Got it? I dropped the Benjamin on the table in front of him. He looked up at me, grabbed the bill without looking at it, and nodded.
You got it, Harry.
I nodded. He'd got it. I grabbed the VHS tape from the bar top, and I got out of there. I had a lot of thinking to do, and a certain fine lady cop to wine and dine. With that and what I'd learned, I figured it was going to be a good weekend, what was left of it. And it was.
Chapter 20. I was at my office by 7:30 that following Monday morning and was surprised to find I wasn't the first to arrive.
Hell, they were all there before me.
Ronnie had grabbed a vacant office and was setting up his computer. Jackie was bustling around organizing the front office. She'd even found herself an assistant, her thinking being that she had to spend time in the mornings at school and there needed to be a warm body to keep things together while she was away. I couldn't do anything but agree with her. So Susie Kennedy became the warm body and Harry Stark Investigations' fourth employee. Tim, his mother had dropped him off. I have to get that boy a ride. Was already waiting when Jackie arrived. What the hell he was doing in his darkened cave at the far end of the suite, I had no idea, nor did I want to, just so long as he could do what I needed when I needed it done. And after my talk with Benny Hinkle, I now had some solid leads that needed to be followed up. I went to talk to him. He was sitting cross-legged on his chair, his hands together in his lap, eyes closed in front of his laptop. Hey, Tim. He came to with a jerk, almost fell off the chair.
What is it?
Am I interrupting? I asked as I pulled up a chair and sat down beside him.
No, sir, Mr. Stark. I was just thinking. I've been trying to...
Well, this thing,
he waved a hand at the laptop, isn't up to what I need. My server should be here by 10, and then...
It's okay, Tim, I said. Don't sweat it. There's no point in fooling around if you don't have the tools you need. Just hang loose for a minute. There are some things I need you to run down for me, but not until you have your equipment up and running, okay?
He nodded, and I proceeded to fill him in on what I needed, and finally handed him the VHS tape from the Sorbonne.
See what you can do with that, Tim.
His jaw dropped. He looked at it like I'd just dropped a scorpion into his palm.
Wow, he said, turning it over and over. I haven't seen one of these since.
Mr. Stark, I'm going to need someone to run me home. I have an old VCR if my mom hasn't tossed it out, and I know I should have cable somewhere.
Okay, just ask Ronnie to have someone take you. Do it now, Tim, before your gear arrives.
I really must get the boy a ride of his own, I thought for the second time in less than 10 minutes. All that didn't take long. When I was done, I still had an hour to waste until I could go get a new license plate for my car, so I spent the hour drinking coffee, wasting everybody's time, and generally getting in the way. Jackie finally had enough and kicked me out so she could get done and away to school. At 9:45, I checked out of the office, told Ronnie where I was going and that I'd be back in an hour. Fortunately, the tag and title office is located just a couple of blocks away from my new offices at the county courthouse on Georgia Avenue. All I needed to get a new plate was my ID and last tag receipt, which I found after a lengthy search of my home office late Sunday afternoon. So I was all set. Oh, yeah, I was all set. I'd forgotten it was getting close to the end of the month. I should have done my time wasting at the courthouse. By the time I got there, the place was packed. What a nightmare. There must have been 60 or 70 seats in the waiting area, and every one of them was occupied. It was standing room only. I took a number and settled in for a long wait. I opened up my iPhone and logged into Safari. I figured I'd do a little research into what qualifications I needed to make my new status official.
Harry? Harry Stark?
A hand touched my shoulder. It was Lawton Nider, elder statesman and senior county commissioner, a legend in his own mind and one-time Democratic primary hopeful for the United States Senate. Unfortunately for him, it was Harold Ford Jr. who won the Democratic nomination, meaning Ider would have to wait a few more years before he could try to unseat the incumbent, Senator Bob Corker. Good luck with that. Ida was old Chattanooga money, so he was down for a while, but never out. He was a weak politician, but still had a lot of connections, some not so good. He was in his early 60s, tall and thin, with gray hair, a brush mustache to match, and wearing a light gray suit that I was certain didn't come from the men's warehouse. I looked up. "Good morning, Ducky," I said, standing up reluctantly. "How are you?" He cringed. I knew he didn't like the nickname, but what the hell? I didn't like Ida either. The nickname had been laid on him by a high school bully, a reference to the waterfowl of the same name, and it had stuck. He offered me his hand. I shook it, again reluctantly. He wasn't one of my favorite people.
"Well, I was just taking care of some county business when I saw you waiting in line," he said. "There's nothing I like better than doing a favor for one of our boys in blue. Let me take you to the front of the line." Ducky was one of those politicians that like to show off who he knows and what he can do for you.
Thanks, but I'm no longer on the force.
Oh, he said, his eyes wide with hope. It wasn't an injury that took you off, I hope.
No, just time for a change.
Well, let me do you this one little favor for all the good things you've done for Chattanooga. It doesn't matter whether or not you're still on the force.
You've earned it.
His southern drawl was thick, and he
oozed with the charm of a used car salesman. Any other time, I wouldn't dream of taking a favor from Ducky Ida, because he'd want it back tenfold down the road. But waiting 5 hours in line for a car tag wasn't how I wanted to spend the rest of my Monday morning. I had things to do, and I had a feeling that time might be running out for Phoebe Marsh, if it hadn't already. "That would be nice of you," I said, but I hesitated for a second and gave it up. "Well, okay. Thank you, Ducky. I appreciate it." Again, he made with a cringe, but then he nodded, smiled, and walked me to the front of the line where a pretty redhead in her 40s was helping a customer.
"Pardon me, Sally. Would you be so kind as to take care of my friend here once you're done with this good gentleman?"
He patted the man being serviced at the counter on the back like he was an old friend. "Geez," I thought, "what a sleaze. I can't believe I'm doing this."
"Of course, Commissioner. It will be a pleasure."
She smiled mechanically without humor. I had no doubt I wasn't the first. He put a hand on my shoulder, squeezed it, smiled, his mouth making like a split potato, and said,
"Is there anything else I can do for you, Harry?"
No, thanks. I really appreciate what you did. This is going to come back to haunt me. I just know it.
You never know. Maybe one day you can do me a favor. What are you doing with yourself, by the way?
And there it is. I'm going into business for myself, I said reluctantly.
Oh, how absolutely interesting. What'll this enterprise entail?
Private investigations. I'm going to be a P.I. Something in the look he gave me made me feel what I was telling him was old news, but that couldn't be. Only a handful of people knew about my plans.
You're not surprised? I asked.
Of course not. Why would I be? You are, after all, a great detective, are you not?
Well, I wouldn't put it like...
Oh, come, Harry, he interrupted me. Of course you are. Your closure rate is second to none. Some like 82%, if I'm not mistaken.
How did you know that? I asked.
I try to stay on top of things, as my job as commissioner requires. Harry, you're up, and I have important things to do. Glad I could help in my small way. Keep the faith, Harry. Keep the faith.
He slapped me on the shoulder and was gone, just like that. The customer at the counter finished, and I stepped up to the counter. The person in line behind me looked more than a little peeved that I had cut in front of him. Sorry, I said, official business can't be helped. To be honest, I felt guilty. Cutting in was something I'd never do, but 5 hours... I sucked it up and persuaded myself that, nope, I still felt bad about it. Sally smiled and said, "What can I do for you today?"
Somebody stole my license plate. I need to replace it.
Goodness me, that's quite a pickle to be in. It was darn fine luck that Ducky was here to help you up to the front of the line. I know you must be who you say you are if you're a friend of his. A nice man, Ducky. Fine, upstanding politician.
He sure as hell has you fooled, I thought, smiling at her.
Now, I know he can vouch for you.
She looked around at her co-workers. But do you happen to have any kind of ID on you? Just for appearances, you understand?
Yep. Here's my driver's license, police ID, and is that enough? If not, I have my birth certificate.
This will do just fine. And do you happen to have your last tag receipt?
Excellent. Just give me a minute while I look you up. It says here your car is a Maxima.
I just love Nissan. They make such fine cars. Now, would you like a vanity plate?
A vanity plate?
I'd never thought about it before, but it would be kind of cool to have something like one of those 70s TV detectives.
Yeah, right, I thought. I can just see me driving down the road with a plate reading Stark. I might just as well put a target on the back of the car saying, shoot me.
No, thank you.
I said. She finished up the tagging and handed me the new plate and registration, and I left her to it. I smiled at the next guy in line and was gifted with a look that could have wilted grass. I drove to Enterprise, turned in the rental, and a few turns of the screwdriver later, I was legit once again. I checked my watch. It was just after 11, and much as I disliked the man, I was grateful to Ducky Eider. He'd saved me at least a couple of hours.
Chapter 21. I arrived back at my new offices a few minutes after 11. I needed a coffee fix in the worst way and some time alone to think. The coffee was easy. The quiet time was not. I soon found out what it is to be in charge of a company. No sooner did I walk in the door than I was bombarded with questions, most of which I couldn't answer. 15 minutes after I arrived, I was already missing Jackie. I needed a front man. Okay, a woman. Whatever. I needed Jackie to protect me from the minutiae that came with running a business. Damn, how long did she say it would be before she graduates? Next May? Wow. Anyway, I dodged most of the bullets and was finally able to go to my own office and shut the door, leaving instructions with the new girl. Hell, we're all new. Susie Kennedy, that I wasn't to be disturbed unless she received a message that my wife had died.
But you're not married. You don't have a wife.
Exactly, I said, gifting her with a grin. Keep 'em all away from me, Susie, until I tell you differently, okay? And that goes for Ronnie and Tim, too. Got it? She had, so I made myself some more coffee and shut myself off from the world. My office was still kind of bare. Ronnie had rustled up an old steel desk and a swivel chair I could use until we had something better, and Kate had found a couple of leather Chesterfield chairs in an antique shop. She'd ordered a proper desk, whatever that means, from a local cabinet maker, and that was it, except for a shiny new iMac computer on the desk. I sat down, tapped the space bar, and was immediately rewarded with the Google Chrome start page. I shook my head, clicked the sleep button, and turned the machine off. I opened the desk drawer and found some yellow legal pads and a selection of colored pens, courtesy of Jackie, I was sure. Whatever, I sent one of the pads on the desk, and a red pen precisely aligned alongside it. And then I sat and stared at the pair. Now what? I sat back in the chair and stared up at the light fixture, two bare bulbs and a black sconce. That's gotta go. I wonder how Tim's doing with his equipment. I almost did it. I almost got up and went to check on him, but I stopped myself. You're here to think, dumbass. Now stop friggin' around and think, damn it. And that's what I did. I picked up the red pen and began to write. I made a short list of names. Frank Marsh. Marsh's investors. Phoebe Marsh. Jojo James, Smallmouth, Penelope Ross, Benny Brown, Stitch Tree. That last made me sad and smile, both at the same time. Then I had one of those weird feelings, and I added Shady Tree to the list. Why? Benny Hinkle said that Brown had worked for Shady, so? Ah, hell, I don't know. It'll come to me. It always does. The more I looked at the list, the more helpless I felt. When I was a cop, I had access to a whole world of law enforcement aids and resources, forensics, criminal databases, experts, even a medical examiner on anything and everything. A few taps on the keyboard and it all lay at my feet. Not anymore. All of that was gone. All I was left with was my experience and brain to rely upon. The experience? Yeah. The brain? Ha!
It was at that moment I remembered the old saying that no man is an island, and I realized that I needed help. I got up from my desk and shoved my head out the door. Hey, Susie. I asked Ronnie and Tim to join me in my office, would you please? And, I grinned to myself, hold my calls. I always wanted to say that. Now I can, whenever I want. Grab a seat, both of you, I said when they arrived. Tim, I said as I checked my watch, it was just after 12:30. The morning had gotten away from me. Did your equipment arrive okay? He nodded. Yes, sir. You want to go see? No, I interrupted him. Not right now. Maybe later. They sat down, and Tim set his briefcase on the floor beside him and opened his laptop on his lap. Look, I'm kind of stuck in a swamp here, I said. I have no resources. When I was a cop, I could snap my fingers and get whatever I needed when I needed it. Right now, I need some answers. I need some help, and you two are it. I hope. What do you need, Harry? Ronnie asked. Jojo James. I need to know who he's working for. Tim, have you had time to... I did. I have. I ran his name through NCIC, and... You did what? I interrupted him. I was stunned. I ran his name through the National Criminal Information Center. He colored up. Is that bad? He asked nervously, poking the bridge of his glasses with his finger. Yeah, it's bad, I said, glancing at Ronnie. He was grinning like a fool. No, I said. Well, yes, but how the hell did you do that? Tim gifted me with a sly smile and said, same way I did the IRS. You hacked the NCIC database? You can't do that. Obviously he can, Ronnie said, smiling. I shook my head, thinking about the implications and the consequences of what I was hearing. Mr. Stark, Tim said quietly, hesitantly, I'm kind of confused. I'm a hacker. It's what I do. You know that. Isn't that why you hired me? Jackie, Susie, Ronnie... Any one of them can do data entry and Google searches, but I do what I do. He shut up and stared at me. It hit me like a slap in the face. I may not have been aware of it at the time, but deep in my subconscious mind, it was exactly why I'd hired the kid. I shook my head and said, you're right, Tim. That is why I hired you. I just didn't... Never mind. Just don't get caught, okay? If you do... tell me what you found out about James. He has a record, of course. A long one. Most of it petty stuff. But he was arrested for the murder of a drug dealer back in 1997, and again for the murder of a 22-year-old prostitute in 2001. The charges, both of them... were dropped for lack of evidence. That, and because he had alibis both times. As far as I can tell, he doesn't work for anybody, per se. He freelances. I still need to do a little more digging, though. Is that okay? I nodded. Yes, well done, Tim. Just be careful. I don't want us to get shut down before we even get started. I paused, then said, How about Smallmouth? I need to know who he is and who he's working for. Tim, did you have any luck with that tape I gave you? Is this Smallmouth? He turned the screen toward me. On it was what was obviously the first page of an FBI file with a mugshot at the top left. How the hell did you find him? Tim grinned. I converted the images from the tape you gave me to digital. They weren't very good. And then I... He paused, made a face, then continued tentatively. I ran it through the FBI's Computer-Aided Facial Recognition Project, CAFRP. And there you are. His name is... I didn't hear the name, My head was spinning. Holy Mary, Mother of God, I thought. What the hell have I gotten myself into? I stared at him without seeing him. Inwardly, I was shaking my head in horror. I'd heard about CAFRP, but I didn't know it was in use. It was controversial even back then. I certainly didn't have access to such resources when I was a cop. Now it seemed I did. And will it be a blessing or a curse, I wondered. I'm sorry, Tim, I said very quietly. What did you say his name is?
Amos Watts.
And what do we know about him? I asked, my curiosity gaining the advantage over my concern.
Not much. He doesn't have much of a record, but he was a suspect in a bank robbery back in 2005, hence his likeness in the FBI database. But he was never charged. The FBI does have a file on him, though, and it seems like they're keeping it up to date. Well, until the last entry 3 months ago, they were. He's suspected of being a mule for the Chupacabra cartel, which is probably why they're keeping an eye on him. That's all they have, officially.
How about unofficially? Ronnie asked.
Again, not much. I found a second file, a stray that someone had uploaded into the FBI system. It was written by a Border Patrol agent named Jose Ramos. It seems he, Watts, is also a coyote, involved in human trafficking across the Rio Grande. But again, there's nothing specific.
He paused, looked guilty, did that thing with his glasses, then stared defiantly at me and said,
Okay, look, Mr. Stark, I know that he's running with, that he's involved with James.
And how do you know that? I asked, dreading the answer.
Joseph James has an iPhone, he said, setting his laptop on the edge of my desk and reaching for his briefcase. I hacked the phone company. Actually, I hacked four of them before I found the right one, and got his phone records. There are several numbers he calls a lot, all the time, in fact. I pulled those records, too. One of them belongs to Amos Watts.
Phone records? I asked, praying that I would still go to heaven.
Yeah, I have a bunch. Oh, will they help?
He handed me a sheet of paper. Oh, yeah, they'll help. I looked down the list. Tim was right. There were several dozen numbers he'd called often. Three of them a whole lot more than often. I looked up at him.
These three, I said, can we find out who they belong to? I asked, by that time knowing full well that he could. He grinned at me. I thought you might ask that. Here you go. He handed me another single sheet of paper with a list of a half dozen numbers with names thereon, and one number without a name, seven numbers in all. Then he handed me the matching phone records, and there was a pile of them. I looked at the records. Jojo James had called one of the numbers, or had been called from the number, 37 times over the past 6 weeks. Amos Watts had talked to the same number 29 times, and to James almost as many. The other number, the one without a name, had 42 calls listed to it. Now that is interesting, I thought. But one of the names was even more interesting. I wrote the name on a piece of paper and handed it to Tim. I want to know everything there is to know about this guy. Tim grinned at me and said, I thought you might say that. Here you go, boss. And he handed me several more printed sheets of paper stapled together at the corner. I glanced at them and then smiled to myself, then set them aside for later. You really do have a knack for this, kid, don't you? I said, is there any way to trace the nameless number? Tim sat there with a smile on his blushing face. I'm working on it. It's a burner, but I already know it was purchased for cash at Walmart on Shallowford Road on September 10th this year at 3:09 in the afternoon. I need to hack into their security system. If they have a camera,
Knowing the time of purchase, I should be able to grab a copy of the video. If there's a good image of the buyer, okay. Okay, Tim, I interrupted him. I get it. And it's a whole lot more information than I need right now. Just do what you have to do, and for Pete's sake, don't get caught. Damn, I thought savagely. Oh, for the days when I could go get a warrant and just demand the security footage. Now, I have to resort to this. There was a knock at the door. It opened just enough for Susie to stick her head inside. I know you said you were not to be disturbed, but there's a cop here. Says her name is Sergeant Gazzara. That you know her. She looks upset. What do you want me to do? Let her in. Before the words had come out of my mouth, Kate was through the door. What the hell's wrong with you, Harry? Hello, Ronnie, Tim. Tim shot up out of his chair as if it was on fire, grabbed his laptop from my desk, and snapped it closed. He did not sit back down. Nice to see you too, Kate. I said, what's up? I just got a call from Henry Finkel. He received a call from Commissioner Lawton Ider, and now he's on my ass. Ida's made a complaint about an incident, about your behavior at the courthouse. I frowned, confused. Incident? What incident? He said you pushed your way to the front of the line and insisted on being helped before anyone else. He said you said something like, I'm a cop, I don't wait in line. Why wasn't I surprised? I looked again at the papers that Tim had prepared for me. I had an idea the answers I needed were already in my hands. He was lying, I said quietly. He insisted on taking me to the front of the line, said it was little enough to do for me after all I'd done for the city. Kate put her hands on her hips. Why would he lie? You're asking me why a dirty politician would lie? I said. She pursed her lips, frowned, turned her back to me, and walked toward the fireplace. Tim, still standing, piped up. Hello again, Miss Gazzara. You look very nice today. Kate was completely taken off guard, as was I, but I couldn't help smiling. Jeez, I love this kid. Tim was right, though. She'd gone home after she'd left me and changed clothes. She was wearing jeans and a white roll-neck sweater under her signature tan leather jacket. She turned, looked at him, her eyes narrowed. She took a deep breath and sighed. Thank you, Tim. Then she looked at me and said, why would he do that, Harry? Lie about something so petty. It's stupid. I smiled at her. I knew something she didn't. Not so stupid as you might think, Ronnie said, looking at Tim. Show him the list, Tim. Tim handed me two sheets of paper stapled together and said, this is a list of the major investors, or should I say victims, in Frank Marsh's Ponzi scheme. I took it from him and glanced down the list. Actually, I didn't. The name I was looking for was only three down from the top of the list. I stared at it, almost unable to comprehend what I was seeing. $3.4 million, I said, without looking up. I'd say that just about wiped him out. What? Kate asked. Who are you talking about? Lawton Ider, I said. Tim, I said, I need to know who owns that burner phone, and I need to know now. Can you? I'm on it, he said, already heading for the door with his briefcase and laptop in hand. It might take a while. He rushed out into the corridor, leaving the door wide open. Sit down, Kate, I said, nodding at the chair Tim vacated. I think I know who's behind all of this. Well, she said, tapping her foot, are you going to tell me or not? I'm assuming from what you just said about Ida that it's him, right? I think so, I said. I think it's all down to Ida. He's lost a ton of money, and he wants it back. But I'm still trying to figure it out. I need to know who owns the burner phone he's been calling. In the meantime, I also think he has Phoebe Marsh, if she's still alive. Can you? You want me to come with you? She asked, her eyes wide. I nodded.
Oh, I don't know, Harry.
What's wrong? Is it your case?
No, not that. I'm still playing the waiting game.